July 31, 2020, it's a Watt from Pedro show.
I get the third doing it. I can't help it. It's the root and the third because this horn is built on 12.
Show. Happy Friday. Strange. Usually don't do a Friday, but I am today because it's a special day. Now, Brother Matt's not with me because we're in quarantino mode a couple miles south of the Love Grotto on Pleasure Point. But I'm not man alone mode totally because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got with me Joe Bouchard.
Welcome. Yeah, man.
Welcome aboard, Joe.
And it's great to talk to you.
Yeah, it's...
You know, I see you at gigs, but usually we're running around, you know, we don't get a chance to talk. So this is great. We get to actually get a chance to really talk, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we get to talk. You're right, because it's like before, and like usually when you come see me play, you come up on stage. I think it was in Hamlin,
yeah.
Connecticut last fall.
Yeah.
And we did ETI and the Red and the Black together.
Yes. And that was so much fun.
Yeah.
I posted some pictures, a couple of pictures on my Facebook today. Got a great reaction. People were very excited that we're actually going to talk.
I should tell people we started off the show with John Coltrane and Eric Dolphy doing some prac in 1963. Nothing wrong with prac. Do you use the P word or the R word?
The P word or the R word?
I have yet to hear a basketball player say, I'm going to go to the gym and rehearse some hoops.
I vary it up. Okay. I've talked to different people who never like to say practice. It's always rehearsal.
God, I hate
they
that.
They never say practice.
Well, they should
practice. It's like, you know, drudgery, where rehearsal is. Yeah, hear it. You get to rehear it and hear it.
But actors rehearse.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody rehearses, and then you got to do some practicing, you know.
Yeah, if you ask me, Joe, if you want to know my bottom line, I think gigs are prac, too. But you need the other prac, you know, with the team. But when you get in front of people, that's the real dealio.
Yeah, yeah.
So then we heard.
So how are you making out now? This is crazy. You've never had this much time off.
I'm not time off. I'm playing every day. Not with other people. I'm playing, I'm composing, I'm recording. Yeah, well, we also don't have the Vietnam War or World War II or World War I. I mean, there's been a lot of crises. We're kind of spoiled.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, even when it goes to this kind of stuff, there was a bubonic plague. It killed like half the people.
Yeah, and they didn't have Skype.
That might be true, Joe. Okay. I should say, after John Coltrane and Eric Dolphy.
They had time travel. Like John Coltrane.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell him what I played after that. It's from your new record that comes out today. It's called Racing Through the Desert.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Okay. Now let's
I'm
go back.
I'm working on a video for that.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to do a video of that. And it's hard because that solo, especially at the end, is really tough. You know, so not sure exactly how it's going to be produced, but a lot of people like that song a lot, you know. I always try to put an instrumental on every one of my solo records. There's some kind of weird instrumental. So,
like Buck's Boogie. You could only get that on Guitars That Destroyed the World.
I know.
For a
long time.
And then finally you put it on the live record. But let's go back, Joe. Let's go back. What's your earliest musical recollection?
Little Richard. I went to my cousin's house. I was probably about 8 years old. And his older sisters, my older cousins, they had Elvis and they had Black Slacks. Who was that guy? Black Slacks. But, you know, they had some rock and roll records. But the one record that really blew my mind was Little Richard's Greatest Hits. I mean, A Wop Bop A Loo Bop, A Wop Bam Boom, Heebie Jeebies, all of those songs, you know, Lucille.
Sure.
We started jumping up and down on the beds like little kids, you know, because they were the old spring beds.
Where was this, Joe?
This was up in Clayton, New York, where I grew up. At my cousin's house.
Okay.
And we'd jump up and down on the bed, you know, in time with Little Richard. It was insane. So I think that was the first time I said, I got to do this. I've got to do this. And, you know, I was a little kid. I didn't know anything about anything. But, you know, you get bitten by the bug and, you know, you got to do it.
That's what I hear. Now, in Clayton there, in the pad you grew up in, was there any musical instruments?
Yeah. I was lucky because my uncle Bill, he was a guitar player.
Ah.
And he played piano and he played the trumpet, but he had a bunch of nice Gibson guitars. I mean, he kind of played like, Les Paul and those kind of songs. It was Les Paul jazz song in the 1950s.
Yeah, I got to meet Les Paul. No sustain. No sustain.
Oh, yeah.
Notes died just like that, but a beautiful man, beautiful.
So
you're saying in the pad there was some guitars, some pianos, or piano?
Yeah. Yeah. We had a drum. Albert had a drum. My cousin had a drum. You know, we put together a makeshift drum kit. My uncle bought a Jazzmaster the first year it came out, 1960. Okay. He had a Jazzmaster, and he let us borrow it. I can't believe he did that. But, you know, that was kind of our – and you know, he played gigs around town, you know, pick up jazz gigs. And, you know, we started saying, hey, if he could do it, we could do it, you know. And he showed us how to play the chords to Walk, Don't Run by The Ventures. So, and then we started playing gigs.
Well, back up a little bit. What about in school? Okay. Were you in the marching band or the choirs, shit like that?
Yeah, I did the marching band.
What'd you play, Joe?
I played trumpet in the marching band. But I was always the worst trumpet player in the band. I mean, there were some good players. But I was, you know, and I sang in the chorus. I loved singing. I loved hearing the harmony.
But you got musical education at the school. That's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And what was the first record you bought for yourself, Joe?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know.
That's okay. Because
we borrowed a lot of records.
Because, you know, when you're young, you ain't got a lot of money. So when you spend your own money, that's why I'm curious.
Yeah. No, we could go down to the drugstore. And in the back of the drugstore, they had a little bin of records. Yeah. It might have been Joey D and the Starlighters. Hey, Let's Twist.
All right.
I got to meet Joey D. Well, he's got a great band.
Well, speaking of which, what was the first gig you went and saw?
Oh, all right. First gig I went was a square dance. They would advertise round and square dancing. So we went, and there was this really weird band, and they had a square dance caller. But everybody was having a good time. It seemed like, wow, this is a lot of fun, you know? And, so that was at the Knights of Columbus Hall. And then maybe 2 years later, we got hired by the Boy Scouts to play a dance. This was the Regal Tones with my brother Albert. And, it was fantastic. I'll never forget. We're playing on the little bandstand in this big room, and there were all these girls on the other side of the room, and as soon as we played the first song, they all got up to dance, and I started looking at the other guys in the band. We just started laughing. We were hysterical. He's like, this is crazy, you know, because, you know, we've been practicing, you know, in the back room at the house, and, you know, we didn't think anybody would respond, and the place went crazy from our first note, you know. That was another thing that I said, I got to do this, you know.
Now, what kind of songs were you playing? Were you guys already writing songs, or were you covering?
These are all covers. These are all covers. We did covers until I was about a junior in high school. And then Albert and I started writing songs. We only had three songs, but one of the songs we actually won the Battle of the Bands. We played Johnny B. Good. We played This Diamond Ring, the Al Kooper song they wrote for Jerry Lewis. And we played this original song. And we were the only band on the show that played an original song.
And what was that song? What was that song, Joe?
It was called She Turns Me On.
I want to play the African Queen.
The drums at night across the river, deep in the jungle, the big picture. Torpedo the
time I hear of someone taking their way. Thank you.
sadly to lead you to pleasure into a bad dream. In ledger.
Show, yeah, that was the African Queen, Joe Bouchard, from his brand new record. Are you a Humphrey Bogart fan?
Yeah, actually, I like those old movies. I don't really know a lot of them. These guys that know every old movie and every actor in every old movie.
My mom, we would watch Turner Broadcasting because it had no commercials, and my mom knew all that shit, all those black and white.
Well, I loved Humphrey Bogart, and I loved Edward G. Robinson, all the classics.
Jimmy Cagney.
I'd heard about this movie, The African Queen, but I'd never seen it. And when I retired from my teaching job, I started watching a lot of old movies, and one of the movies was African Queen, and I'm watching it, and it's like, wow, this is great. This would be a great theme for a song. I mean, it just about wrote itself, you know?
That was one of the first movies filmed on location.
Yes, on location in Technicolor. I mean, bright Technicolor.
Right.
Nobody knew what Africa looked like until they saw that movie.
That's right.
I mean, it was a black and white world before that. So, it just clicked with me, and that was the first song that I finished for the album. So I knew that if I had that one to start it off, the other songs seemed to come pretty easy after that.
That was the foundation.
Yeah.
Okay, then we heard A Heavy Like the World, Guided by Voices, Pat Smear from the Germs with Yummy Yuck, Deer Hoof, and Wada. Wadada, Leo Smith, they just put out a live record, charity record. Few from Japan with Urahara. The Last, they're putting out the Lost record. I guess it's like Joe Nolte's Pet Sounds. Vitas wrote me and had me write some liner notes. Different City for a Different Life from the Human Hearts, Brother Franklin. Maya from Up in the City with Tilt and Flowers. And finally, Joe Bouchard with She's a Legend. Now, yeah. After high school, did you go to college for music?
Yes. Albert had
We should tell people about Albert. Listeners, Albert Bouchard is Joe's brother.
Yeah. And a good drummer, too.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
Excellent.
Yeah. You know. He went off to college to be an engineer. He was going to be a civil engineer, you know, the kind of build roads.
Sure.
And when he was in college, he met this short guy named Donald Roser, who was studying to be a electrical engineer. So the two engineering students flunked out. I was still in high school. So they flunked out and, you know, started a band called Swaltoid Underbelly.
Now we're talking, we're talking S-U-N-Y Stony Brook.
Yep, exactly. So meanwhile, I'm in music school, you know, getting my music degree. I actually studied piano. Piano was my major instrument. You couldn't study guitar back in the 60s. It was not allowed. Guitar was banned.
What about bass?
Well, if you wanted to be an upright bass player, you know, I actually did play that's the first time I played upright bass was in music school.
What school?
I would steal an upright bass and go play jazz gigs. On Friday night, they'd leave the lockers open where they had the upright basses. So we'd run down there, grab a bass. You can imagine these guys running out the back door of the music building and putting the bass in somebody's station wagon and going to play a jazz gig. Then on Sunday night, you bring the bass back and stick it back in the locker.
What music school is this, Joe?
This is Ithaca College.
Ithaca.
Yeah, you've been to Ithaca.
Yeah, Cornell. Yep. I last played there with my Missing Men opening for the Meat Puppets.
Oh, my God. That sounds like a great... Yeah, Ithaca is a great music town.
Okay.
I met so many great musicians there. I had great luck because I could play four gigs on a weekend at Cornell.
Wow.
I mean, the party weekends wouldn't stop. It'd be Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, and Sunday night. You could eat up four gigs in a weekend. And so I knew that, you know, it was good. I never had to work a job in the cafeteria or whatever, and got through school without a big loan. And then when I graduated, I said, I don't want to be a teacher. I want to rock.
Your plan was to be a music teacher.
Well, yeah, I could do that. Yeah, I figured I could do that.
What was going through your young man's head when you entered college that made you change?
I didn't want to go to Vietnam.
Ah, okay.
You had to go to school. You had to go to college.
Yes, sir.
To avoid ending up, you know, in the front lines in Vietnam. So, also, I was kind of young and naive too. So I didn't think I was ready to, you know, become a rock and roller right out of the chute, you know?
Okay.
So I figured, you know, if you study piano, you learn a lot about harmony, you know? And also I had a good guitar teacher in college. He had to teach me on the side. He wasn't part of the curriculum, but he was a really great teacher, and he bought me my first bass because he wanted me to play bass in his band.
Wow.
So I ended up playing jazz in a college band for 2 years before I joined Soft White Underbelly or Stark Forest Group.
And that's why you brought up your brother Buck Dharma.
Yeah. Because they were playing in New York while I was up in Ithaca.
Well, that's New and York I, also.
Yeah, and I would go during my vacations.
Oh, you're talking stay, about New York City.
Yeah. Yeah. They were in the, actually out on Long Island. And so during my breaks from college, I'd go live at their house. And I became like the sixth member of the band.
Okay.
And, you know, it Joe, eventually worked out that they wanted me to play. So I said, you know, it was an easy fit.
Do you remember your first gig with them?
Yeah. It was on a flatbed truck in the park.
Okay.
And Sandy Perlman played harmonica.
Yeah, he's the third guy you didn't mention. He went to school with those guys too, right?
Well, he was like the... He was the smart guy. He was the manager,
right,
you know,
right.
Invented the idea of Blue Oyster Cult. I love Sandy. He was an inspiration, you know, just because he was so damn smart, you know?
Yeah. Now, how long did you have to practice with him before that first gig?
Oh, maybe 3 or 4 practices. That was it.
Wow.
Because I knew all the songs that they recorded for Elektra in the early days. I knew their songs. And, you know, I don't think it was a long set. Maybe we played for a half hour, 40 minutes. And that was our first gig. And then, you know, they got dropped by Elektra. And so we had nothing coming in. We were supposed to tour with Led Zeppelin, and that didn't happen. So we went and started playing in some clubs. And we developed our set, and you know, some of the clubs they say you can't play your own songs, you have to play cover songs. So we would tell them, we would play one of our own songs and say, well, here's a song by Glenn Campbell. And it was one of our songs. They had no idea what we were playing, you know. You know how club owners are.
Oh yeah, the good old days. Fuck that.
Yeah, the good old days. So we would play our own stuff whether they wanted to us or not, you know. And It was a lot of fun. We did a couple of demos. Sandy Perlman took them around to the record labels. Nobody liked them. We recorded 4 songs and nobody liked them. So we went back, we played more clubs and, you know, and then we went back and did 4 more demos.
But Joe, you're not just a sideman, because when you look at the first album, there's a couple songs written by you.
Oh yeah.
Screams?
It was Screams. A lot of people talk about that. That was my first song I wrote for them. I wrote a couple of songs in college, but Screams, you know, was just something I threw together in like, I don't know, 15 minutes, or I had some notes in a notebook, and I just said Screams, blah, 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 Screams, blah, 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 blah. And we were in a hurry to get the first album done, and they decided they wanted to do it. And, you know, put the Blue Oyster Cult magic on it. You know,
that's great.
You gotta put that the magic touch. I don't know what it is. If I could bottle it, I'd be a billionaire. You know.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour, last day of July, 2020. Special guest Joe Bouchard. Hold tight for hour 2. July 31, 2020, it's the second hour of the Lot from Pedro show. Let's go.
No. Ho, 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 ho.
for Pedro Show. Started the second hour off with Hit and Run, Joe Bouchard off the new record. Out today, people. So, yeah, you guys get on CBS, Columbia.
Yep.
The first record. Actually, yep. I heard the first record. It's like Stooges. I heard the second record first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you had to go get the first one.
Yeah, because you guys had played the Long Beach Auditorium for $2.50.
And I remember that.
Yeah. It was Tyranny Mutation. And then when you came back, it was the Long Beach Arena. Rob McCoy, yep. KNEC DJ. In fact, you used a couple songs for On Your Feet, On Your Knees. I think Before the Kiss and Subhuman is Long Beach.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm skipping ahead.
Great shows.
So you guys put out that first record, mm-hmm. and then you start touring. But you also put out a weird 10-inch from a pizza place.
Yeah, it was a radio show. It was basically a live radio show from the Nugget Pizza Parlor.
And where was that?
In Rochester, New York.
Rochester, okay.
Yeah, WCMF.
Home of Kodak. Really nice rock place. Home of Kodak, yeah. Home of Xerox.
Yes. Kodak. Yeah. And played, Eastman.
That's, yeah, I played Rochester's a couple times. So I was always interested in the process because you would see Sandy's name in the credits. You'd see all the whole band's name in the credits. That's what I loved about the Blue Oyster Cult. There wasn't really a total front man, a total meister and side mice. It was like...
It was a team.
Yeah.
It was a team. I mean, I think really what's special was the creative writing team. Every guy in the band wrote music. Even Alan, Eric, you know, Albert especially was very, very active. You know, and he did a lot of the arranging for the band. But and then we had Sandy and Richard Meltzer and Sandy Perlman.
Beautiful man, yeah.
Yeah.
And these guys would bring in words.
Yeah. And they would just be lying around the house. There'd be a whole pile of great lyrics on the piano, sitting on top of the piano.
Oh, and, okay. That's how it was done.
Nobody had dibs on this. Anybody could pick up a lyric and start writing a song.
But when you guys got together, it wasn't like everybody had their own four tracks. It was like you guys arranged stuff as a band.
Yes. Without, you know, I don't even think we used a cassette player in the first record. It was...
That's what I mean, like no demos, like you guys do it in
no boom boxes, nothing like that.
Yeah.
And we would just say, here's the way it goes, and try to remember it the next day, you know.
But there was words on the piano, a stack of words.
Yeah, stack of words on the piano.
And this was
I'm
like,
on the lam.
And this was like a band house.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a really nice house in a really nice neighborhood of Great Neck, Long Island. And they hated us because we were the hippies. We were the dirty hippies in a nice neighborhood, you know. It was nice. Yeah, everybody's doctors and lawyers in that neighborhood. But we were the dirty hippies in the middle of the block, right in the middle of the block, not even around the corner. It was like right there in the middle.
Joe.
And it was a three-story house, too.
Joe, can you
so
tell
everybody
me,
had a bedroom.
Can you tell
about
me,
that?
Can you tell me if... There was other bands that inspired BOC, or was it just a total self-contained thing?
No, I mean, everybody inspired us.
Okay.
But also, you know, I think the Birds a lot, and the Doors, oh my God.
I think Albert once told me about Blues, Al Kooper's...
Blues Project.
Yes.
Blues Project, big influence. Danny Kalb was the guitar player.
Yeah.
Buck learned a lot from Danny Kalb. I actually joined the Blues Project.
Wow.
About 6 years ago.
Okay. Still
good. I rehearsed with them for 2 weekends. I was the bass player in the Blues Project. We were planning to do a tour of Italy. I got a phone call from Steve Katz, who was the rhythm player in the Blues Project. And he happened to live in the town where I lived. And he calls me up and say, you know, I got an offer to go to Italy. Would you want to, you know, play in the band? I say, are you kidding me? Of course. You know, play in the Blues Project and go to Italy. So we rehearsed for two solid weekends. And the tour never happened.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, was Bucks, was his, did he have music in his family? Does he come from a musical family?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Buck's dad, who just passed away, he was in his 90s, was a great jazz saxophone player.
That's what I heard. I heard about that, but I wanted to make
sure. He was a bebop. He could play bebop.
No, but
like
you hear it in fucking Buck's playing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, Buck doesn't like jazz, per se. He doesn't really like jazz, but you can hear that jazz phrasing.
Big time.
You know, and also that sort of, the idea of being able, well, I can do this different. I don't have to do this the same every night.
That's right,
know?
Yeah.
That definitely comes from his father's influence.
I'm gonna play a project you got with your brother and Dennis Dunaway called Blue Coop.
All right. Well, I've already had two beers, and I'm ready for the broom. Please, Mrs. Henry, won't you show me to my room? I'm a good old boy, but I've been sniffing too many eggs, talking to too many people, tipping too many kegs. Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please, please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. I'm down on my knees, and I ain't got the dime. Little lady, or I'm gonna fill up your shoe. I'm a sweet bourbon daddy, and tonight I am blue. I'm 1,000 years old, I'm a generous bomb. I'm T-boned and punctured, I'm even known to be calm. Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please, please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. I'm down on my knees, oh, I ain't got a dime. Too hard, you know my stool's gonna squeak. If I walk any further, my crane's gonna leak. Please, Mrs. Henry, there's only so much I can do. Why don't you look my way and pump me a few? Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please, please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. I'm down on my knees, and I ain't got a dime.
How about some blues?
I just did a
blues. But some down blues. Down blues.
Let me think of one. I got all these lyrics floating around in my head, and I just got to put a set of them together.
It's a double request, too.
Double request. I wish I had my heart
breaking. Lightning Hopkins?
Well, yeah, something like on that level. I'd like to do an up-tempo one, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay.
This is an E. And this is an Arthur Crudup song. And he was a guy who taught Elvis Presley how to play the guitar. And this is called Amino Frisco and Dirty Rotten Santa Fe.
Sitting there looking at a picture, I swear I saw it move. It's been so many days now, and I've always known that you die more every day, but here I really feel it. Sometimes I find myself staring into the face of my best friend, who just happens to be my toothbrush. That lonely feeling.
Thank you.
Walk from Pedro Show. Blue Coop. Tornado warning. People, Blue Coop
yeah.
is a band that Joe's got with his brother Albert and Dennis Dunaway from the Alice Cooper Band. We had David yeah. Smith after that on some upright bass solo called Weight and Water.
Nice.
Peter Lochner from the old Cleveland scene with Please, Miss Henry. Bobby Dylan, right? Or he covered
yeah.
that in the basement tape. Lewis Cole with Motel Sadness. Burger Bag from Midnight Bomber with Bombs at Midnight. I said, I fucking like to get across the border with that name. And Dick
yeah.
Gerard, Massachusetts, Reset B. And finally, Deep End, Blue Coop. How did Blue Coop get them together, Joe?
Well, I've been playing with Dennis for a long time. Remember we used to come and see you play?
Absolute.
The Mercury Lounge. Well, that was when Albert was doing the brain surgeons.
Sure.
But when the brain surgeons sort of ended pretty abruptly, Albert was available. And to be honest, Neil doesn't really like the tour.
We're talking Neil Smith, people, the Alice Cooper drummer. I think he married Dennis Dunaway's
Neil
sister.
Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis is married to Cindy Smith, who is Neil's sister. But so I had a good time. I played with Neil for probably 15 years. And we did good gigs, but we'd only do like 3 gigs a year. You know, what kind of band only does 3 gigs a year? Well, it's not in Neil's thing to get out and, you know, jam Econo. He doesn't jam Econo. No, it's not jam Econo. It's jam extra expenses.
So that band didn't work out. So you went for the bass player.
Yeah. So Dennis wants to play. Dennis loves to play. You know, we could find a gig anywhere.
I would say after U.S.
We'll make it work. We'll make it work.
So let me tell you this. After U.S. rock and roll bass players, when I was a teenager, you were my biggest influence, U.S. rock and roll bass player. And then probably Dennis was the second. I mean, I was big influenced by James Jamerson and Larry Graham, but kind of with the rock and roll, you guys. Across the ocean, a lot of those guys had a big influence.
Our first tour, we opened for Alice Cooper. It was our second tour.
Okay.
First tour was with the Byrds. The second tour was opening for Alice Cooper in 1972. And it was fantastic. It was eye-opening.
Killer. And I think that was the Killer
tour.
Yeah,
the Killer tour. Yeah. And I would watch Dennis play every night. And I was amazed.
Well, who was your influences for rock and roll bass, Joe?
That's a good one. I don't know. Probably John Entwistle. He lays down a good bottom.
Yeah. He was big on me. Did you like Jack Bruce?
I love Jack Bruce.
Yeah.
And you know who I really like?
Yeah.
Jack Cassidy.
Oh, yeah.
From the Airplane.
Right.
I think Jack Cassidy, you know, and I'd say style-wise, I'm kind of like Roger Glover.
Oh, yeah.
Of Deep Purple.
Sure. Machine Head.
He plays with a pick. He plays with the pick, and he just lays down. He knows that the star of the show is Blackmore. So he just has to lay down a foundation for Blackmore, right? So I laid down the foundation for Buck Dharma.
Yeah, but I got to tell you.
It's a no-brainer.
Buck Dharma comes up with this Lightning Hopkins lick for Stairway to the Stars. That counterpoint bass line that you came up with is so bitchin', Joe. I mean, that is a bitchin' bass line. That's more than just laying it down. You're going toe-to-toe with the man. I love it. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, last day of July 2020. Special guest Joe Bouchard. Hold tight for hour 3.
Yeah.
July 31st, 2020. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
my love. but they all look back at me, can't understand my agony. A hollow soul, cold tears that have run dry. Life seems so empty, and this world so dark and cold. I'm so far from home, I'm so far away. I live my life, but it don't seem very right. Nothing's the same since they came and took you away. I drove down this road, not knowing where it goes. Just seeking shelter from the rain. But the black of night, descending from the sky, strangled my mind and it washed away my pain. I found a place where I felt safe. A little house where a black dog used to stay. Curled up inside, nowhere to hide. A chewed up bone and an old sock by my side.
Strangely in love.
Show started off the third hour with Joe Bouchard off his brand new record, Once Upon a Time at the Border, because Joe is a Frontera man. He's a border man. And then we had Crane with Only to Be With You, Wasted Space, Chrissy, Black Moon Tape with The Trip, They Took You Away from the Blood Drained Cows. That's got Greg Turner, who used to write in Cream. Good stuff about you guys. Had a band with Richard Meltzer called Vom. In Hollywood.
Yes.
And then finally, Strangely in Love, Joe Bouchard. Joe, tell us about this new record. Where'd you record it?
Most of it I did at home in my little studio.
Yeah.
You can do that these days.
You can make albums. This is a guy who's been toured, played everywhere, big studio. You can make it at your pad. Come on.
Yes. Yes. I can make this little room sound like Madison Square Garden if I want.
This album is great. It sounds tits,
what's
Joe.
That?
It's fucking hot.
I'm getting a good response everywhere, so I'm very happy. But so, I had the drums. It's the one thing I can't do here.
Yeah.
So I got Mickey Curry to play drums. He's a great drummer. He asked me, he says, why don't you get Albert to play? I said, well, I've only been playing with Albert for half a century. and also, Albert found out that I was going to use Mickey, and he said he loves Mickey, and Mickey loves Albert. I mean, he really loves Albert's playing, you know. So I, you know, it was a good choice. We recorded at a studio in West Haven, over by New Haven, and the sessions were just fantastic. You know, we actually recorded 17 songs, but, you know, 11 of them made the cut on this album. Some of them may show up in the future. The biggest thing.
You know, there's a bass player in New Haven, Joe. Doug Wimbish. Yeah. Doug Wimbish.
I love Doug. I tell you, I was real close to getting Doug to play on one of these tracks.
Is that right?
Yeah. I wanted him to do Walk of Fame because that's his bag, you know? I think that Walk of Fame came out good, but, you know.
He's into the pedals.
What's that?
He's into the pedals.
Oh, yeah. I've seen him play. I saw him play with Living Color several times.
Yeah, yeah.
He's great. He's a nice guy, too.
Yeah, man. Incredible. I know. But he goes back to the Sugar Hill stuff. And.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Much respect. So did you mix it yourself at your pad?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Good sound.
Well, a lot of mixes. I go out and I do a mix in the house using really these Yamaha NS10s. You know, the little simple, real basic studio stuff. Nothing fancy. And then I take it out to the car.
Of course, that's the test. Yeah.
You know, you test it in the car.
Right.
And that's the real test. Because you think you have it when you're mixing it here. But once you take it out to the car, that's the real test.
Yeah, because everybody doesn't have studios at their pads.
Yeah. Yeah. but I, you know, I'm getting better too with guitars are better. I'm getting better recording guitars. The bass is the bass from Burning for You.
Is that right?
Yeah. Every bass part on this record is the Music Man that I used on Burning for You. So a lot of fans that miss my bass playing in Blue Coupe, say, or some of the other bands I play with, they get to hear all my bass in its glory.
That live Subhumans where you're rocking a P bass with that James Jamerson bass line, it's so good. Oh man.
Yeah. But
after that, I think you went to an Alembic. Yeah, you tried out a lot. When I first saw you, you had a Rickenbacker.
You know, the Rickenbacker was real short. I only had Rickenbacker for a few months.
Okay.
Somebody stole it.
Ah, sorry.
I think we were out in North Dakota, and somebody stole it. They stole it right off the stage.
Damn.
So, you know, but, you know, it wasn't really my bag, and it wasn't the best Rickenbacker. I think the best ones, you know, Chris Squire had a great one, and McCartney had a great one.
What about Lemmy? What about Lemmy?
Oh, and Getty. And no, Lemmy.
Lemmy, yeah.
They made it work, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, I was more the P-bass guy, you know.
And then
when I got the Alembic, I mean, what I didn't know about the Alembic is I got it because Stanley Clarke played the Alembic.
That's right.
Yeah, but what I didn't know is you had to be 6'4" to play the Alembic, and you had to have arms like a gorilla. Pardon my analogy there. But you got to have big hands. You got to have big hands. That was a big boy bass.
Sure, sure. Joe, I had to go to fucking short scales for gigs. I know what you're talking about. Look, it's the middle of summer. I want to play Winter.
my love.
Thank you.
Bye. Always knew the river was in. if you spend your life waiting to see that shooting star separate Venus and Mars. And you always knew the river was in your blood when you fell strangely in love, insanely in love. Moonlight plays a ride on the river toward the end of the day, toward the end of the day.
People ask music for this edition. That was Winter from Joe Bouchard. And winners up where he grew up are for tough men. It's tough enough to manhandle an alembic bass.
It puts hair on your chest.
That's it. And we had A.B. Normal Brother Phil doing their Stellar Dream interpretation. Some Sid Barrett there, edit too, from Mammoth. Spraying after that, Constant Hum, brand new. And finally, Bottom of the Bottomless, Joe Bouchard.
Ooh, nice.
Bottom of the Bottomless. I thought that would be a great last song. Is it the bottom of the... Was it the last one?
Yeah. Oh, no, actually, Winter is the last song.
As you were recording.
Actually, the last one was Once Upon a Time at the Border.
Oh, okay.
And Winter. Winter was the last one, you know. The Bottom of the Bottomless is cool, though, because John Shirley sent me those lyrics. You know John Shirley? He's a science fiction writer.
Yeah.
And he writes lyrics for Blue Oyster Cult.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Last two albums, most of the lyrics are John Shirley.
Wow.
And he's excellent. He's excellent, you know. So he sent me an email because he heard some of my other solo albums. And he said he was a fan. So I said, John, send me some lyrics. Next day, he sends me She's a Legend and Bottom of the Bottomless.
And
they're really fun to work with. He's so smart. You know, Sandy Perlman introduced him to the Blue Oyster Cult guys.
Okay.
Because Sandy didn't want to write lyrics, but he knew this guy, John Shirley. So Sandy was the reason that one of the reasons that they picked him to help them with their lyrics.
Let me ask you this, Joe. You know the Blue Oyster Cult symbol. This guy,
yes.
Bill Golic.
Yes.
What can you tell me about him?
Well, I lived in the house with Bill Golic. I think the other guys, I was the only guy that was, no, Eric lived there too, but he was living some place else too. So it was pretty much me, Bill Golic, and this other guy, Phil King. And we had this house out in the suburbs of Long Island. And I would watch Bill do his artwork. And he had the symbol on the – he had it taped on the wall in the living room of our house. And he would stare at this symbol for like a week and just move like one little curve. He was working on that curve to get that curve really smooth.
Sure.
Yeah.
Joe, you wrote a song called Hot Rails to Hell.
Yes.
Was that about a gig you went to in the city?
Yes.
With Bill Golic?
With Bill Golic and Roran Rasan Kirk. You know, the guy who plays three saxophones at once?
Yeah, sure.
And it was really intense. And really intense. And Bill Golic was so cheap, he didn't want to park his car in the city, even it would have cost us like $5 to park. He decided that he was going to park out in Queens. We were going to take the subway from Queens into Lincoln Center where the concert was. So that's where I got the idea for Hot Rails to Hell.
Now, why did you say, you know darn well?
Well, I changed it to damn well.
Yeah, I mean, was it that heavy in those days you couldn't say it?
You are so much into these details. But I don't know. I didn't want to get banned from the radio.
Yeah, I understand. I just said that. But it always bugged me because you guys were so balls out. And then you hear you say, darn.
You know, I've done interviews for 50 years. You're the first person that's asked me that.
Because it goes through my head every fucking day for the last 55 years.
I do the same. You hear it. Yeah. No, it became easier and easier. As the shows got like louder and tougher, it was easier to do damn well. So,
Joe,
you got it. That's right. I didn't want it banned from the radio.
What's your advice, Joe? Somebody young getting in the racket.
Well, you gotta love it. You gotta love it like you love it. You love it. What else would you do?
Yeah.
Would you get a day job? No.
Well, I make music in the daytime. Where can people find you on the internet, Joe?
JoeBouchard.com.
JoeBouchard.com.
JoeBouchard.com. You got it.
Next plan. What's your next plan, Joe?
Well, you know, Albert and I started our own record label. Maybe you don't know that.
You told me.
It's called Rock Heart Records.
You told me there's new records on it.
Yeah, and Albert's got a new album that'll be out in October.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. I play a couple of tracks on it. Fantastic album. And then we've got other projects we're going to do in 2021, 22. You know, compilations. We've got all this solo material, and now we finally have a real structured record label to get the stuff out. So far, mine is the first album on this label. And I think it's going to do really well. It's really doing well. It's going great guns right now. And like I said, Albert's record will blow your mind. You'll love it.
I can't wait to
hear
it.
So you got to talk to him.
I will.
Yeah.
I promise. But, you know, when I get to see you again, it's going to be a good time.
Absolutely. Love Sooner the better.
I owe you so much. You added to my whole music thing so much, being that bass man that was a creative man.
Yeah.
Thank
I'm
you.
Doing my thing. You know, it's my calling, you know. And now I've got more time than I've ever had to do the creative stuff. So,
right.
You know, you got to put in the time.
Sure.
Ian Hunter, you know, from Motley Hoople, I had lessons with him, basically. Because he would write songs with Neil and Dennis. And he would be like my writing teacher. And he says, you know, you think you might be able to get by with just doing this and that, but you got to put in the time.
Yeah.
There's no substitute.
No shortcut.
In the hard work.
No shortcut.
No shortcuts. Just got to do it. Yeah. And if it's calling to you, that it makes it beautiful because it's not like work, you know.
Well, it's kind of like work, but that's okay.
It's a good word.
I know, the semantics again. It's been a big honor to have you on the show, Joe. When you get this other stuff out, let's come back on and talk about it.
Absolutely. I love talking to you. We should have done this years ago, but I'm glad we're doing it right now.
You know what
There's
Orson,
nothing like the now.
You know what Orson Welles said?
Nothing like the now.
You know what Orson Welles said? No wine. Before it's time.
Fine. You got it. Great.
Love you, Joe. People, it's been the last day of July 2020. This is why people show special guest Joe Bouchard. Keep your powder dry.